Hi, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning in to this segment of Ask a Lawyer, a production of the Institute for Native Arts and Media. This half hour is sponsored by Oklahoma Indian Legal Services, serving Indian country in Oklahoma for over 40 years. Now, as we all know, we've changed the format of Ask a Lawyer just a little bit. We're asking our oils attorneys to kind of take their oils hats off for a little bit and just talk to us as attorneys. And today, Aaron's with us, and he looks a little nervous, and so being in the hot seat, and I'm just saying, it's we're just going to ask some questions and see where the conversation takes us.
All right, sounds good.
And so, as a dad, as a new dad, he looks like he still hasn't caught up on any sleep, and probably won't for like 5 years, if that. And as a tribal citizen, right? Because you're Chickasaw, right?
I'm Chickasaw.
Okay.
Yep.
And with tribes having their own courts, and the Chickasaw Nation has a very organized law enforcement agency there.
Right, right.
And with McGirt and everything else that's going on. As just an attorney, outside of oils, outside of all that, just as a tribal citizen who just happens to practice law and be a new dad, the conversation that I want to discuss here is most of it has to do with a case that's not even in Oklahoma. A lot of us know about that horrible, horrible thing that happened in Oregon where those four college students were murdered in their apartment. And it took a while to find the guy that did it, and they found him, and it's this really crazy story where he was not a student in Idaho. He was a Washington State PhD candidate, and of course the details haven't come out yet because, as you know, law enforcement, they don't say anything until they can be in front of a judge and all that. So knowing all that, and just, you know, how their families are having to navigate this system, how do tribal members have a hope to get through in these cases where these jurisdictions overlap here in Indian country? I know that's kind of an extreme. It's kind of an extreme example, but it's not like it doesn't happen here in Oklahoma.
Sure, sure. Well, first of all, it's good to be here. Sorry if I sound a little ragged, like you said. Fairly new dad, got two little ones, so I'll do my best to stay active and awake during this conversation here. I'm sure that always speaking with you puts a pep in my step, so good to be here again. So let's talk a little bit about that. And I'll say I'm not a criminal law attorney. I don't necessarily focus on that point, but I am a tribal member. I'm a father of one tribal member, and trying to enroll my second one right now. So these issues are important to me. Obviously, safety should be important for all of us, and we want to be able to depend on not only our tribe, but our nation and the systems around us to be able to get answers and provide protection on that. So coming from someone who's not as verse in criminal law, I'll just say that I'll kind of put a lens on it as a parent here, I guess. Obviously, these are important issues. When an emergency occurs, whether it's something like what happened in Oregon or just a situation where someone needs help, we want to know that we can get immediate response, right? Whether that's from the tribe, from the state, from the federal government, just that people aren't left out there on an island. And we all know McGirt's been a focal point lately. I won't go into too many details on that because I'm sure it's been talked ad nauseum at this point. But I can just say from a father's standpoint is that it's an interesting take to try and balance between wanting to make sure that tribal members and families are safe while still making sure that the sovereignty of our nations are held up. And it's kind of a touch and go situation. Parties learning who has what jurisdiction, and but that's not to say that that hasn't always been there. As you know, we have a checkerboard system largely in not only Oklahoma but elsewhere, dealing with property that's been allotted and separated. So it's not that these questions haven't been there before, it's just more well known, and we're working to make sure that we can adjust to what the reality is of our situation, which is tribes are sovereign nations, and that should be protected as well. And that doesn't mean that services or protections should be any less for tribal members or non-tribal members in those jurisdictions as well, right? So it's a balancing point.
I think one of the things that, to me, that concerns me about a lot of this, and living in the heart of the Chickasaw Nation, is number one, my property taxes. So for the last couple of years, since McGirt's been in effect, right? I every time I go and pay my property taxes, I always go in and ask if I can pay them to the Chickasaw Nation. Like, is it a thing for me to pay these to the Chickasaw Nation? Because I'll tell you one thing. When you're talking about emergency services, right? And you're right. Talking about whatever you need 911 for, you know, your house is on fire, you know, somebody collapsed, somebody's breaking in your house, whatever you need 911 for, especially as a taxpayer, especially as an Indian taxpayer, right? You want to know that when you call 911, you're not going to get asked, are you native or not?
Yep.
Because they'll make you wait it out. And so that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about this cross jurisdiction, right? And a lot of the BIA law enforcement, they're cross deputized. And I think that's a fantastic thing because, you know, it bolsters that. But how are we guaranteed those services, just like you say, in a McGirt jurisdiction, in an actual McGirt jurisdiction? And they tell you, I mean, that's kind of a loaded question. Are you native or not? Well, if I say yes, then what? I have to wait for somebody out of Ada to come and help me?
Well, then, I mean, how far can the questioning go, right? You say, are you native? Well, are you enrolled? What tribe? Where are you? The list can go on and on. It can be a rabbit hole and you never get any services. So yeah, I agree with you. Cross jurisdiction deputization has seen benefits, and I've definitely seen that supported by the community, that needs to be something to cooperate on, right? I mean, I get that politics are involved. Those in Oklahoma here know that it was a heated gubernatorial election. We know that it was a focus on tribal policies that we probably haven't seen here as much in Oklahoma in recent times. But with McGirt coming up, it's a much bigger issue. I'll peel back the cloak a little bit here, Kelly. My dad's a fire chief, so grew up in the fire service. It was normal for me to go to the fire station and to see fire trucks. So when they came to the schools or when I saw them around, that wasn't anything new. That was just life. So one of the policies that I could always see from my father growing up is that he wanted to provide more instead of less. And that typically got him, I don't want to say got him in the hot seat, but that takes money. Right? That takes hiring staff, that takes making sure you have enough stations in place, making sure that everybody is trained. So the difference between having two ambulances on call at all times versus one, it can be not only a big difference financially, but it can be a life-saving situation. So maybe that's kind of apples and oranges, but I can tell you that from my history growing up in that situation is that I've always been of the mindset of I'd rather have more to support people than less, especially in emergency situations. And so that's why the idea of cross deputization, the idea of everybody understanding the situation and being able to respond, you go from stretching everybody thin to having this support system there. So I'm obviously I'm not a policeman, and I don't sit in that area as much, but one would think that cooperation would be the way to go on a lot of that, and I hope to see that more in the future. I'm sure we are seeing that a bit more, but to rest easy at night, we definitely want to see it continue to grow, right?
Yeah, and I think that, especially being from the fire service, like I'd rather have a fireman respond to my emergency than a police officer. And as an Indian woman, not because they're a little bit nicer to look at, but I know that what's the worst thing that the fireman could do to me except call the cops? that's the worst thing. Like, hey, my cat's, like, when you think about that, like, my cat's stuck in a tree. The policeman's not going to have a ladder. The fireman's going to have a ladder, right?
Right.
And
right.
So, but
well, Kelly, I'll try and find you a calendar next time I'm at the fire station for you.
Oh my gosh, please do. I used to live kind of by this firefighter training station. I had a friend whose apartment faced it, so they would do their drills. Anyway, I'm getting off topic here, but let's just say it was a lot of fun.
Gotcha.
but going back to your point, and I like the point that you made about trying to serve everyone, because just in an emergency situation, let's just say you're there at Walmart, you're shopping with your wife and your family, and all of a sudden you see a child choking. Do I care if that kid is white or a tribal member or black or whatever? Do I give a shitey shite about that? Or am I going to go Heimlich that kid?
Exactly. People helping people, right?
And so when you get down to stories like this, to these personal stories, and you hear about these dedicated public servants, and they are out there. I see them. I know that they're out there. But just like you say, when it really comes to helping, to delivering that help, it's like their hands are tied. Even when you're talking to first responders, right, emergency managers, you're doing CPR, you're representing your organization, right? But one of the things they tell you too is to be careful, because you can injure these people and then you can get sued. Like that specter always has to come in there to almost kind of dissuade you from helping in situations like that, right?
I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, and so I might show that I've been out of law school a little bit here, but I believe there's a some sort of safety clause where if you're trying to help someone on that, then you have that as a
like
protection,
a good Samaritan.
Right? A good Samaritan law. Exactly. So you have certain protections built in. It gets a little bit more tricky when that's your job, right? Is to help take care of people, and you have jurisdictional issues. So, I mean, I wish I had all the answers on that, Kelly, but the processes in place right now, largely, I think, deal with education. You have to have a listening ear. You have to make sure that people understand that this isn't going away. This isn't something that's just going to be swept under the rug by the Supreme Court, you know, today or tomorrow, or by the Congress or anything of that matter. This is tribal sovereignty. And so it's here to stay. So how can we cooperate together on it? How can we make sure that no steps are slipped? But then how can we also make sure that the expediency is met? So I'm not here to claim that I have the answer on that, but it's definitely a concern that I have as a tribal member, as a father as well, because last thing I want to know is that, you know, something happened at my house and nobody's responding. Does it matter that I'm on this property or that property. Well, that might be the lawyer that needs to determine that later on down the road. But I like to think that in at least my own activity, we're helping people first. And we have to be aware of these situations that are here. But I'm not an emergency situation. I don't handle emergencies well. That's probably why I'm not a firefighter, right? I mean, I'd probably be the guy panicking on the side, not the one rushing into the burning building. So all of these decisions and all of these situations, we got to remember that they're having, people are having to make very rapid decisions and very emergency high-strung situations. But if we keep people in the forefront on these, I'm sure things will work out. It may take some practice. It may take some education. Certainly we'll take education no matter what. I'm confident and hopeful that as things progress forward, we're going to see change for the benefit of tribal members here.
I really hope so, because that the tribal members and the citizens, we're the ones getting lost in the mix. We're the ones getting lost in all of this political nonsense of, well, we can't take our ambulances there. And that to me is really pushing and making a statement in favor of privatizing all of this, these health services. And I mean, as we've seen, well, you haven't seen, but in the last decade, in the last 10, 15 years, and when as this push to privatize everything health, right? Everything. They want you to pay out of pocket for absolutely everything now.
I know
that's why can't afford the Affordable Care Act was such a huge thing. Yeah.
I know I can't afford an ambulance most of the time.
Exactly. So. That's exactly my point. And so how do, like, I that's what I'm, when we're talking about these policies and we're talking about those things, and especially when you're talking about rural Oklahoma, right? If you're living out in, I don't know, east of Hotchatown, even with some of the best of the Choctaw Nation services, you might be in an area that is so remote that even the best of emergency services can't get there. I mean, just environment, you know, just there are all kinds of variables when those kinds of things are coming out. And I agree with you that education, that's the key, because I used to be in severe panic mode too. Like I was like, I've been there, sir. And just like, what are we gonna do, you know, kind of running around. But learning about just those kinds of things and the way that first responders are, and you're right, like it's you've if the building's on fire, you got to keep a cool head and try to, life safety, that's what they tell you, your life first, but then, you know, make sure that lives aren't being lost. And so that brings me back to our original point about if you see someone whose life is in danger and your gut reaction is to save them. And I would hope that EMTs, if you're a paramedic, I would want you to have that instinct.
I tend to agree with you on that. the medical bills can be a lot, but I want to be around to pay them. That's kind of my thought. You know, we'll discuss the money afterwards, but save my life, right? And I think that's what most people would agree to, right? Exactly. So, you bring up a good point, dealing with just being out in rural areas and being with oils, traveling for wills and probates and just general cases. I love the scenery in Oklahoma. It's beautiful, but you find yourself going out there quite a lot. And I guess you could say I'm kind of a Yeah, a city/suburb kid that grew up with a bunch of country family in Southeast Texas. So I was forced out into the country sometimes.
Mad, huh? Were you mad?
I know what it's like for, you know, the TV not to work because, you know, the cable can't reach out there into the country. I know what it's like to, you know, well, we're not going to talk for 5 days because there's no cell phone towers out there, right? So I mean, I grew up with it. I won't say that I necessarily enjoyed it myself, but just think it in the sense of if you have, you know, spotty phone, spotty internet, it can be difficult to get anything out to where you're living. And I don't judge anyone who loves that lifestyle. There's a part of me that just wants to disconnect and go camping or be out in the country for a little bit and, you know, let life slow down. When it comes to emergency situations, it's already hard enough to contact people. And to then have on top of that a legal battle of whether or not you get aid in the first place can be scary. That can be something that when a person doesn't have control of that, what do you do, right? I think the answer right now is, you know, we keep working on the system to make sure that that's completed. And if you have emergency situations, it never hurts to already have your plans set up. How am I going to contact someone? Is there someone close to me that can contact emergency services if need be? Where's the easiest point for me to go to? And as Oklahomans, we know what it's like to prepare for emergencies. We do it every spring, seemingly every fall now. We don't get a break with tornadoes and all this wind and weather. So preparation helps. That's something that you and I have control of right now. And sometimes that can help, right? Just having a little bit of control of the situation. And for the things we can't control, that's the growing debate. That's the part that still has to be ironed out. We all know that tribal sovereignty is important. We all know that cooperation is important. But as just a general person, taking the lawyer hat off, the things I can control, which I'm learning, can't control a lot with two little kids running around, right? So the things you can control, take solace in that. Have plans prepared if you know that emergencies might be likely. Don't be afraid to contact emergency services. They have non-emergency lines, so don't just dial 911 and say, hey, what do I do if this happens? Fire departments, police departments have non-emergency lines, and if you have questions, you should be able to get answers on that. And you can clarify, I think I live on tribal land. I know I live on tribal land. I'm a tribal citizen. If this happens, do I contact 911 this way? Do I need to contact someone else? Giving control to you as the individual is sometimes the best step in order to curb some of those fears, but then also deal with the reality that we all live in very different situations. And we have big questions ahead of us.
I think one of the things too, and I'm really advocating for this across all of the shows on this platform and all of our social media is 988. Have you heard of 988? Where it's the Oklahoma Mental Health Hotline. And if you're having mental health issues, rather than calling law enforcement, who's not trained to deal with it and who don't want to deal with those issues, right? That's not why they signed up. Call 988. And you can text that. I know sometimes that it's easier to text in some of those rural areas than it is to actually get a line out. And so those kinds of things and those kinds of alternatives out in these rural areas. But you're right, like having a relative know where you are and what's going on, I think that's one of the reasons. And tribes are the best at it. Tribes are the best at advocating, go check on your elders. You know, the weather's about to turn cold this week. And so I, you know, everybody's what I try to prep my elders, my grand, you know, I try to get everything in place. That way, if something happens and the weather turns bad, they have what they need and I don't have to get out and risk myself to go and do those things. But being prepared for an emergency anyway. Who can I call? Who can I call that can go up the street and help her rather than waiting for me for 30 minutes?
Absolutely. I agree with you, Kelly. And I still text my wife every morning saying, hey, I made it to work. You know, just simple things like that, letting people know you're okay. Have a contact. And a good way to meet neighbors, too, if you haven't met them, is just say, hey, just want to check in on you. Got some extra blankets if something comes up. Because one of the big things that I've always felt in Indian country with tribal members is a sense of community, right? Just people caring for each other. So it's always appreciated when someone reaches out and just wants to make sure that somebody's okay. So I have faith in our communities to be able to pull together and help people out during these times.
Yeah, just a little bit of background. Them damn Indians, Thomas Ware the Third, and I actually got to take Aaron's to Anadarko for the first time. So we fed him step and fetch him. And that's the thing about Indian communities, right? Especially being like a thinner, light skinned Indian. Any women like me, they think you never get fed, right? They're always trying to be right.
I tell you what, I had some good food down there, and I definitely enjoyed it, and I didn't come back starving, that's for sure.
But that's how it is in all of these Indian communities. We went to, oh my gosh, I can't believe I can't remember this, and I've got 1,000 pictures of when we went out to one of the Choctaw elder centers out there. It's not in Idabel. It's one of the smaller ones that's in the like the rural areas. That's one of the things I love about the tribes that are ultra organized compared to some of us, and they have all of these resources. But I'm telling you what, that center out there, they had the best potatoes I've ever eaten in my life. I don't know who made those potatoes. I don't know how they prepared them, but those are the best potatoes I've ever eaten. So that's the thing that about Indian communities too, is you don't go away hungry. They're
right.
Gonna feed you.
That is absolutely right. And I know that every time I head down to court now, I ask somebody nearby, hey, where's a good place to eat around here? Because there's going to be somebody, hopefully some tribally owned, that you're going to find some good food somewhere.
For sure. Well, see, I told you, Aaron, I told you this wasn't going to be that bad.
I'm hoping I survived, right?
See, so. I'm telling you, you survived. You lived to tell the tale. Stephanie wouldn't let me rattle your case too hard. So if I did, no, but
I told myself coming into this that if you had questions on changing diapers, I got that under control. Making bottles, I can do that. But that tends to be most of my life right now, and I'm sure others can understand that situation. But we're loving it, right? I mean,
I think you need another one. I think you need one more.
I want to breathe, but I mean, I've forgotten what it's like to have a full night's sleep. But I'm told I won't get that until 18, 21, maybe never. I'm not sure.
I don't think it ever happens. And I'm here to tell you that's one of the reasons, like I'm anti, like I'm a great anti, but at this point, because when I'm the oldest cousin of my generation. So my first job was babysitting from a very young age. And I don't know if you know any of my cousins or whatever, but that's why I don't have kids. I'm not doing this. So I know all about those diapers and bottles. Actually, I don't know about the middle of the night ones, because I could always leave. That's the beauty of being auntie. I'm like, diapers, there you go.
Well, it's the little moments, right? Like I'll share one of the things that made me smile a couple of days ago was my oldest came to me and said, good night, Dad, I love you, brush your teeth.
Oh.
And so that's the first time I think where I've ever just been addressed straightforward and then told, hey, your breath smells bad too. So, but you live for those moments, right? So, and you know, bringing it back home to the tribes, we're families out there. But we live for those moments together, and we get through the tough times together. So, you know, I'll be out here as well doing what I can to help tribal members.
Well, I sure do appreciate it. And don't forget, folks, Oklahoma Indian Legal Services is the kind sponsor of this show. If you have any questions or if you're in need of legal services, you can always contact them. Even if they can't handle your case or if it's outside of what they do, they always have resources that they can point you to guide you. But if you're also needing a probate, if you need your advanced directive, anything like that, contact them and get that in order. That's one of the things that we talked about here in this segment is the importance of having your emergency documents in order and having your emergency contacts in order in case something happens, because even if it's not something for your health, the weather here in Oklahoma doesn't like us. We don't get to have a good relationship with Mother Nature like the folks, I would say, in Hawaii, but Mother Nature's kind of not liking them either right now with the volcano. So but she kind of works us around with her wind and her storms. So be prepared for that. And again, Oklahoma Indian Legal Services can help you. They have great attorneys on staff, as you can see, and they're very knowledgeable about probates and getting your emergency paperwork and emergency docs in order, just in case, because you're right, we just don't know. And it's always better to be prepared. And Oklahoma Indian Legal Services can help you do that. Thanks so much for tuning in. And for more information, if you want to know about Oklahoma Indian Legal Services, or if you want to donate to them, you can visit the OILS website at oilsonline.org. This has been a production of the Institute for Native Arts and Media, a 501c3 nonprofit organization based in Norman, Oklahoma. The views and opinions expressed in this segment are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect INAM or the OILS organization. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll catch you back here next week. Have a great day.